Okay.
Okay, so welcome you all to the afternoon session, and it's my pleasure to introduce Dan Bolton, who will talk about consecutive crime and the hazards we do with consciousness.
Okay, thank you for inviting me. See if this works. I know when you think of collaborators of John Friedlander, I'm not the first name that you come up with, or maybe the second or third, but we actually have four joint papers. I thought we had three, but when I was preparing the talk, I discovered a fourth one. Yeah. So since people don't know about these papers, I thought I would say a few words just to advertise them. The first one we did, actually John was at MSRI, I think in 92. 91, 92. And we worked on a couple problems, and this first paper was on singular series averages in the distribution of Goldbach numbers in short intervals. And one of the results we proved here is that this S of n is the regular singular series for primes differing by n, or the Goldbach, you know, writing n as a sum of two primes. That's the typical singular series. And we proved in this paper this average result. Of course, it goes back to Hardy and Littlewood that it averages to one, but the second term actually no one had obtained before. Montgomery had a big O of log of x. And you remember that, John? Yeah. And actually, when I first went to the Institute in 1982, I actually needed this average. This is a more average form of the singular series. I needed this term. This is the one that often in applications, usually you get the singular series average with something like this. And I was trying to prove this formula with just this minus a half x log of x term, and I couldn't do it. And so I went and asked Selberg one of the first times. I asked him if he knew how to do it, and he just instantly went to the board and proved it for me. And then I asked him if he thought you could prove this formula where it's unsmoothed. And he thought about it for a second. He said, "Yeah, I think you could prove it, but it would be the kind of thing you wouldn't want to bother to do unless you had some reason for doing it." And it turned out, luckily, in this paper, we actually did have a reason. But most of the work actually had already been done for us, I should say, by this author who had done a similar thing with phi of n. And so this log of x to 2/3 comes out of an estimate of Walfish for mu of n sort of multiplied by a fractional part, which is quite a complicated proof. Anyhow, so that was in this first paper, and I think it was Walfish? Yeah, Walfish. It's in his book on exponential sums. I haven't actually read that proof. Then our second paper was called Sums of Three or More Primes, and in this one, we wanted to see if we could get an accurate asymptotic formula for the number of representations of n as a sum of k primes. They're weighted here and by log. And here's one of the theorems we proved in there, which is that if k is bigger than or equal to 5, you actually get a precise asymptotic formula if and only if GRH is true. This is actually a sharp estimate. This term actually oscillates at that size too. But there is a story associated with this, which is I think we didn't quite get this result. Maybe John can correct me. I think we had something a little bit weaker. And he was talking about our work, I think, either at the Institute or at Princeton, and Selberg and Bombieri were in the audience. And at some point when he was describing our proof of whatever we got, they were talking, you know, a whole bunch to each other. And at the end of the talk, they went up to him and asked him why he hadn't evaluated the sum over zeros exactly rather than estimate it. And that was where this error term came from. And in fact, this term can actually be written down as an actual sum over zeros of all the zeros of all the L functions with an error that's actually a size smaller. So this can actually be replaced by a very messy exact expression. Yeah, and for k equals 4 and 3, for 4 you lose by about some factor of log, and for 3 you actually lose by a power of n in the asymptotic formulas. Then our...
In Princeton, we didn't
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, two we haven't finished yet. Then our third paper, I think this one appeared pretty quickly, but I think we worked on this in Toronto in 94. And this was actually, the fourth paper sort of improved one of the things in the third paper. We're looking at the error in the prime number theorem for arithmetic progressions, where you square the error and then you sum over all the reduced residue classes. So this is sort of a variance for the error. And what you're probably familiar with is more where you then sum this guy over Q, and then you get asymptotic formulas, which are usually called Barban, Davenport, Halberstam theorems. And so the feeling here, here's a conjecture. The feeling is that the error in this formula is about the square root of this term. So if you took the square root of x over phi of q and then squared it, you would get something that's of size x over phi of q, and when you sum it over the q here, you would just get x, I guess, or is that right? Yeah. So basically, it's a little bit bigger than that, but the conjecture we made was that it's x log of q, and then this explicit lower order term. Hooliard conjectured something like this, and this formula will hold, you know, all the way down to x to the half power. So we made this conjecture. It's partly based on Hardy-Littlewood conjectures would imply it. And in this paper, we proved a lot of results that are, if you average this in various ways, like in Barban, Davenport, Halberstam, you do obtain results that are consistent with this sort of on average. But we actually proved a different type of theorem that was new at the time, which is that you can actually get unconditional lower bounds when Q is very close to X, which are the right order of magnitude, but the constant's off. And on GRH, you can even do it down to some power of X. So you actually unconditionally see this thing can't be too much smaller than that conjecture. And this uses a Bessel inequality argument and these sort of truncated divisor sums that that keep being used, have been used a lot since then. I should say also that I think Hooley beat us here. He improved the size here in this unconditional one, and then another student of John's improved, beat Hooley. Is that right? Your PhD student, I think. No, but yeah, pay attention, John. Yeah, I think your student, I forgot his name. Oh, okay. Anyhow, I think one of John's students improved on the size of this a little bit in the case of Siegel zeros. Yeah, it was an 800-page PhD thesis.
Oh, yeah, Emmanuel Snapper.
Yeah, I mean, he did manage to publish like a 3 or 4-page paper out of that thesis.
He got several papers,
right.
But he didn't get a job.
Oh. Uh-huh.
No, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think he had rich parents, and he may have gone to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
I read enough.
Yeah.
I read enough. I can say what he did was essentially.
Yeah. I should say one more. So that's the end of my talk about what I've worked with John, but the question comes up, how come we stopped collaborating after about 1999? And the answer, and this is a warning for you young people, is I started having kids. I had a kid in 95, 97, and 99. And after you start having kids, your math career is over. It's just nothing can be done anymore. Anyhow, well, now let me talk about, I don't know. I guess so. So I want to talk about first sort of a generalization of a result of Gallagher. And the rest of this talk is joint work with Andrew Lidone. So in 1976, Gallagher proved that, he did ask me to mention something, but it's up there. Gallagher proved, if you assume a form of the Hardy-Littlewood prime tuple conjecture, that the primes are distributed according to a Poisson distribution around their average. So the statement of his result is that if H is lambda times log of n, where you're going to be looking at primes in, around n, so that's lambda times the average, then if you count the number of intervals, if you count the number of intervals n plus h as n goes through integers from 1 to n that contain exactly k primes, then you get this familiar Poisson density for that. And in particular, if k is 0, you're counting the number of those intervals where there's no primes, and you can sort of twist this thing into this shape where it's a statement about consecutive primes. So basically, from Gallagher using Hardy-Littlewood, you get that the number of prime the number of differences between consecutive primes that are bigger than or equal to lambda log of n is asymptotic to this e to the minus lambda times the number of primes. So you get this exponential fall off in large gaps between primes as you increase from the average. And what Andrew and I proved was that if you assume the same Hardy-Littlewood conjecture, which I'll state in a second, then this actually, the same result actually applies right down to including when you just count the consecutive primes whose difference is exactly d. And what you get is then the result which you would get for just counting differences between primes, whether they're consecutive or not, and superimposed on it, you get this this Poisson decrease in it. It's not actually very surprising because the Hardy-Littlewood conjecture itself is a statement for specific differences. And basically, Gallagher used that conjecture to compute these moments where you average over lots of tuples. But anyhow, we did prove this result. This is that singular series that was in one of those papers with John. Really, this proof, the result in the proof is really already implicitly contained in this paper of Alisco, Rubenstein, and Wolf on jumping champions, which is sort of the reason we got interested in this subject anyway. They didn't explicitly state it or prove it, but everything you need is right in there. So the Hardy-Littlewood conjecture we're actually going to use, I'll state it here, is that if you take a set of k distinct integers, those are going to sort of be the shifts we're putting in our tuples, and you count the number of we call pi of x h the number of positive integers where all of these numbers, n plus h1 through n plus hk, are all prime, then Hardy-Littlewood conjectured in 1923 an asymptotic formula for this. Here you could use x over log of x to the k, but the more accurate formula you use, just like for the prime number theorem, the logarithmic integral. The singular series is this expression, which is familiar. I won't go into it. And in these formulas, we always would assume that the singular series isn't zero. When it's zero, the results are trivial. You basically can't get primes, or only one tuple will contain primes right at the start. So that's the conjecture. And the form we actually used is that you assume just an asymptotic formula for the number of tuples for each k, and you assume it holds uniformly over all tuples in the interval from 1 up to the length of where you're looking at differences between primes. And there are stronger forms of this conjecture with stronger error terms and stronger uniformity. And we actually are using some of those for more precise asymptotic formulas, but those aren't so interesting. They're when the lengths are getting short, not when they're getting long. And how we actually do this is sort of trivial, I have to admit. It's just inclusion-exclusion, which is, basically we're going to look at a special type of tuple when we're looking at gaps between consecutive primes. We're going to always fix the difference to be d. So if k is 2, we only really want to look at the tuple 0d. And then we're going to do inclusion-exclusion on tuples where we fix the two endpoints. The first entry will be 0, the last one will be d, and then we'll throw additional shifts in between the two. So we call these kind of tuples, we use the letter d for them. And then you can just reformulate just new notation for the Hardy-Littlewood conjectures, where pi 2 would be differences between two primes being D. And here's where all these differences, this is the same thing, only with 0 and D being the first two differences, and the rest are just whatever we specify in here. And let's see. So here's inclusion-exclusion. Basically, if you understand this and one more thing, you'll understand everything. The number of consecutive primes differing by D is less than or equal to the number of primes differing by D. So that's our first upper bound. And the next one, and this is, Erdős used this kind of argument a lot. If P minus P prime are equal to D, are not consecutive, then you had to have a prime in between to make it non-consecutive. So what we need to do is we need to subtract off all the times we get triples of primes. But when you do this, sometimes you'll subtract off the same interval more than once. So like if you had a quadruple of primes, this prime between where P is equal to P prime plus D would get removed twice if there was actually two primes in between. See what if I'm going to subtract off. So what we now get is a lower bound where we take the number of pairs and we subtract off the number of triples that you can get where you've put another prime in between the two primes at 0 and D. So this is a lower bound. And then you just continue the process. So you now have the number of pairs minus the number of triples averaged over all possible ones you can put in between, plus the number of quadruples and so on. You now substitute the Hardy-Littlewood conjectures in here. And what happens is that when you put this conjecture in, you get the singular series averaged over all these tuples where the first shift and the last shift are fixed, but all the others have to sum over every possible tuple. And we call this quantity ace of k of d. It's an average of singular series, but the first and last entry are fixed. And what Odlitzko, Rubinstein, and Wolf proved is that what you get for this is exactly what you expect, which is you expect basically to get twin primes at 0 and d, and the other guys just average out as if they average to 1. So they basically you prove that you get the singular series for just diff primes differing by d, and all the other terms that just act like they're 1 in that sum. We've proved some stronger estimates, but we don't actually need them in what I'm doing today. And then you just plug that into that expression, and then you get this expression, which can be resolved into that exponential if you want it to be. And basically, since the number of consecutive primes is bounded between two of these guys, as long as the error terms go to 0, which they will, you get that asymptotic formula. So anyhow, we did this work actually about 2.5 years ago, and then we got interested in this other problem, which is called the jumping champion problem, which was in this paper of Wolf, Odlitzko, Rubinstein, and Wolf. And we got sort of interested in it because they claimed that it was much harder than the Hardy-Littlewood conjecture. So we actually wasted a lot of time because we had been told it was really complicated, and we had already done this earlier analysis. And so it took us a few years to actually completely convince ourselves that you didn't really need to know any of this hardly to actually solve these problems as long as you're willing to assume the appropriate Hardy-Littlewood conjecture. So anyhow, this problem here came out in a Journal of Recreational Mathematics, which, at least from our experience, our first paper, this is not a good place to get your papers accepted at really good journals if you're starting from something which is considered recreational math. But anyhow, so the problem was to find the most probable difference between consecutive primes. Find the most probable difference between consecutive primes? Well, this is recreational math. Well, you don't know that the difference increases. In fact, I can tell you right now, here's a problem. Try to prove that the most common difference between consecutive primes isn't 2. I've actually tried quite hard. Try to prove that would be basically the least likely difference between consecutive primes, but we can't prove that that isn't actually going to be the most common for even as x increases. Or, well, if you don't believe, try to prove this. Well, that's why I'm giving this talk.
Oh,
Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, should I skip ahead and tell you? Okay. Actually, the expected answers are actually given in the next year. This was their answer. Basically, I mean, a few people thought that 6 was the most probable, but they already said that what they already knew right near the beginning was that eventually 6 would lose out to 30, and then to 210, and then to 2,310, and then 30,030, which you all recognize is something. Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, the motivation for this problem came out of what used to be called PC Magazine, which is now, I think, defunct, where some computer programmers thought from their experience that 6 appeared to be the most common distance between two primes. Which, you shake your head, but try to prove they're wrong. That's my challenge to you. Prove that 6 is not the most common. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's actually quite a frustrating problem. If you actually want to prove something unconditional, it's a very frustrating problem. Yeah. Anyhow, Ergish and Strauss in 1980 were able to assume the Hardy-Lillard prime pair conjecture and did prove that there was no most likely difference because it does grow. And then Liskow started talking about this problem in the 90s, and John Conway invented this term jumping champion or leaping champion. He had a few names for it. And he put in the idea that you should look at the champion for primes less than or equal to x, so then you're precise about it. And so here's how we formulate it. You let Pn be the nth prime. I'm repeating here. N of xd is the number of primes, consecutive primes whose difference is d. In this problem, we sort of want all these differences to be, all the primes to be less than or equal to x. I mean, most papers now usually have Pn plus 1 minus Pn here, but it doesn't make any difference. And then we'll take the maximum what's the maximum number we're going to get for consecutive primes that are differing by d? We'll max over all the d's given x. And that's what makes the problem actually easier. We're not trying to do something like this. We're just trying to do a maximum over all of it. And then the set of jumping champions for primes up to x are all the d's where you actually take on this maximum number, the maximum number of primes with any given difference up to x. So I have an example here to make this clear. X is 100. Here are the primes less than 100. There's exactly 25, or one quarter, and my students usually generalize from that. But there's 24 differences. You count these differences. So n of 101, there's one prime difference that's 1, there's 8 prime differences that are 2, and so on. And therefore, n star of 100 is 8, that's the most common difference you get, and the jumping champion is 2. And here really, what I'm now going to show you is exactly everything we know. This is it. Everything else is conjectural. So this is the list of the jumping champions. I didn't list them chronologically. I've just sort of given the essential statistics. These numbers only jump at primes. When x goes between primes, nothing happens till you hit the next prime. So like, for example, 1 is the champion when x is 3. You guys understand that? There's only one difference, and it is 1. But at 5, 1 and 2 tie now. And then at 7, 2 takes over as the jumping champion. When x is 7, there's 2 gaps of size. Anyhow, so you get the idea. This is the first time you get the given set of champions. And this is the last time, except for we only really know it for 3 and 5. After this, all these others, we've never found any larger place where 4 is a champion than 4 or 5. But we can't actually prove that. Only when you have 1 as a champion are we really pretty solid on the situation. 6, you can see if you look at the table here, 4 and 6 tie at 941, and therefore you can conclude that 947 is the next prime, and that's where 6 takes over, and they're up to 10 to the 15th. 6 is always the champion up to 10 to the 15th. And Alisco, Rubinstein, and Wolf made the following two conjectures. The first one is that the jumping champions greater than one are four and the prime Orioles, the products of the first primes. And they made a second conjecture, which they only made because they said it might be easier to prove this one, which is that the jumping champions tend to infinity, which is really what Erdős and Strauss proved conditionally, and further that any fixed prime will divide all sufficiently large jumping champions. So the conjecture two is immediately a consequence of conjecture one, hopefully easier. Alisco, Rubinstein, Wolf expressed the view that the Hardy-Littlewood-Tupel conjectures were insufficient to prove conjecture one. And that was mainly, I think, because the problem they were really interested in was finding the transition between 6 and 30, which they estimated to be at about 10 to the 35th. And they estimated the transition between when 30 is the champion and 210 to be at 10 to the 425th. And these are if you're going to use Hardy-Littlewood conjectures to get these kind of numbers, you basically have to apply them with incredible precision, far more precision than they probably even hold at, and just sort of heuristically take tons of tuples. And so no one actually knows whether these conjectures are right or wrong. And how you check them is you basically go up to this range and take 10 million or 100 million primes in a row and do the champion in that interval and see if it's consistent with this. But that doesn't actually answer the question of champions themselves. Okay, so here I'm repeating the Hardy-Littlewood prime pair conjecture. It turns out the whole problem basically resolves down onto the structure of the singular series here. It's a product over primes that divide D, odd primes. And this factor here is a little bit bigger than one. About 2 years ago, Andrew and I proved that if you did assume the Hardy-Littlewood prime pair conjecture, and you assume it holds uniformly for integers between 2 and log of x squared, we're looking at primes up to x, and now we need the tuples to be in this interval from 2 to log of x squared. But they have to only be just two numbers. Then this conjecture 2 is true. And the key thing here is this lemma that you can already, here's the singular series, and you can actually already see the lemma from the singular series. Because if you want to make this, when is this thing going to be big? It's going to be big when you have as many prime divisors of D as possible. Because each prime that divides D puts into this product a number bigger than one. And furthermore, you want all the small, most biggest contribution comes from the prime 3. You get a factor of 2, and then it goes down. So basically, the lemma says that the singular series is basically increasing. It's maximal on the sequence of primorials. Because if you had a D here that was missing any of its beginning prime factors, you could always just take one of the later prime factors and throw it out, include that earlier one, and you would get a smaller D that was larger. So basically, the primorials are definitely where this thing are maximal. So now, here's how we actually prove this conjecture, assuming the Hardy-Littlewood pair, prime pair conjecture. You start with the number, here's the Hardy-Littlewood conjecture. It includes non-consecutive differences, but we want to talk about consecutive differences. So I'm basically repeating some stuff here because I stuck two talks together here. Basically, we do just what I did earlier, which is you look at the triples now. And when you don't have consecutive here, it's because there's a prime in between. Here's your inclusion. This is exclusion. This is inclusion, I guess. So the number of consecutive ones is bounded between here and here. But unlike earlier, we now use the Brun or Selberg sib estimate for triples. You see, in triples, basically, triples of primes occur with a density of x over log of x to the third, which is 1 power of log smaller than pairs. So basically, you're just not, this sum here isn't going to be very large. The singular series is quite small. I mean, D to the epsilon is actually quite a bit bigger than it is. So this sum here over all the triples is bounded by D to the 1 plus epsilon times x over log cubed, whereas this guy is x over log of x squared. So as long as your D is a little smaller than log of x, this is just an error term, And there's basically no difference between consecutive primes and not consecutive primes in that range. And so here's what you basically get if you, so you assume the Hardy-Littlewood prime pair conjecture. You first have this asymptotic formula if d is, say up to size square root of log. That's where the sieve bound just says the number of triples doesn't matter. And we always have this uniform upper bound here, just from the fact that the pair, there are more pairs than there are consecutive pairs. And these are the two estimates that give that conjecture to. The first one shows you that the jumping champions go to infinity. That's really Erdős and Strauss, because the singular series grows. So this is an asymptotic formula, and it's getting bigger at each over the primorials in D. So it's definitely growing as D grows. And the second one is what actually gives that conjecture, this upper bound. So let me, I think I have plenty of time, so let me go through this proof a little bit. You first show that a jumping champion for x can't be bigger than log of x squared. There's just a little argument here. You can read it, but basically what it says is that if you have the number of prime difference, if you have h differences of primes that are of length h, if you had more than x over h of them, their total length would be longer than x, which is longer than the whole interval. So your whole number line would be filled up by these differences that are of size h. So basically, you sort of have a trivial upper bound that the number you have that is bigger than or equal to h or equal to h is can't be more than x over h. So therefore, as long as d is bigger than log of x squared, the number of primes you can have whose difference is d, if you just plug in here, is x over log of x squared. But this already loses out to twin primes, which is 1.32. So the maximum, you only have to go up to log of x squared, because past that point, and there's just not enough consecutive primes left. So then we have this notation. I don't know if it's any good. The floor with respect to a sequence. So this is basically the largest primorial less than or equal to y. And piece of k is the sequence of primorials. So here's the argument to prove that conjecture. You let d star be a jumping champion for primes up to x. Suppose there's a prime that doesn't divide d star, a fixed prime. Then the maximum is bigger than the maximum over a restricted set of d's. And then this is bigger, by our asymptotic formula, this is bigger than just this with a specific d in it. And we pick a big d, where this singular series is d, which is the primorials, the biggest primorial less than or equal to square root of log. On the other hand, the maximum is equal to the maximum at the jumping champion, which is we just use our upper bound formula for. So when you put these two together, you get a lower bound of basically 1 for the singular series at a jumping champion divided by the singular series for the primorial. And on the other hand, if this the jumping champion doesn't have a p star in it, you can put it in and then remove the factor from the singular series. And then this singular series is less than the primorial that is bigger than the product of these two numbers. And d star goes to infinity, so this guy can't be as big as a d star because it's fixed. And d star is less than log, so it's log squared times this factor. So you insert that in, you get this inequality. But this is a standard thing to estimate. Basically, the singular series is just the product over all the primes between primorials is all the primes in these ranges. And by Merton's formula, you can just take logs and estimate this. And I actually do have a log in this talk. So consequently, the singular series just doesn't grow that quickly. It's basically 1 plus a term that goes to 0. And on the other hand, that lower bounds this 1 plus p star, upper bounds this. So the conclusion here is that this side goes to 1, therefore this p star has to go to infinity. Anyhow, so that was the first conjecture. And then last year, we proved the first conjecture for sufficiently large jumping champions. And I think with some work, if you formulate it, you could basically do it for all the jumping champions. But you would have to formulate appropriate Hardy-Littlewood conjectures that were, going down to some fixed value of x. But anyhow, appropriate form of the Hardy-Littlewood prime pair and prime triple conjecture will prove the first conjecture that the sufficiently large primorials will be jumping champions. And every jumping champion will, sufficiently large, will be a, will, every jumping champion will be a primorial, and every primorial will sometime be a jumping champion. And the conjectures we need are, here's the pair one, and we need an error term here that's a little better than, basically it's 1 over log of x squared. We actually do need now a pretty modest error term, because we have to sort of see the fluctuation in the singular series. And the asymptotic formula for triples here, we just need the asymptotic formula, and we're doing it in this range from 2 to log of x squared. And it's basically a repeat of the previous argument almost. Here's the upper bound from just pairs, and we include that error term. And here's the pairs minus the triples. But you see, we get this factor where we take the singular series for three things and we average it over the middle term, and then in that asymptotic formula you get singular series times d. So this is the term, this factor represents the falling off, because you're getting more and more non-consecutive differences coming in as d gets close to log of x. And then this is error term from the first conjecture. This is an upper bound we get from the sieve upper bound from prime quadruples. And then what we really needed to make everything work was we had a problem which was, right when you were around the average spacing, we had to exclude the possibility there couldn't be a large gap between primes that just occurred all the time and beat the champion that you would get from this asymptotic formula. And that's where I'll talk about this one slightly at the end. And basically what messed us up the whole time, for like a year, what messed us up was that we had this earlier result, and we knew that, you see, this exponential decline says that when you're at like 100 times the average spacing, that you don't have hardly any proportion of what you used to have. I mean, it's exponentially small. And we were convinced that you had to extend this formula for larger and larger lambda to exclude the possibility of having a really large gap between primes that just happened by chance to occur a lot. And so we were working really hard with this thing, and it was really tough. And it turned out you never needed to use any of that stuff. You just basically did inclusion exclusion once, and you got it. So let me now show you the idea of how you prove it. It's not very hard, which is, suppose you have a primorial that's is about size log of x. Then the log of the primorial is the sum of the logs of all the primes, which is, you know, the Chebyshev phi function, which by the prime number theorem is asymptotic to the kth prime pk. And of course, log of this factor in this range is log of x. So when you're up around the average spacing, the kth primorial is basically the previous primorial times log of x. That's how the sequence is moving there. And if you look at that term in the asymptotic formula, you have the singular series, and then you have 1 minus, this is coming from the non-consecutive primes that are being generated by triples. So you're losing because from this factor, but you're gaining on the primorials from this factor. And the question is, when does one beat the other? And the idea is that the primorial factor at each primorial bumps up by this one extra term, which is basically size 1 plus 1 over log of x. And this guy is continually decreasing. And when does this factor actually become larger than this increase, so that you'll then start to go down? You've passed the jumping champion. And it's clearly, if you take d to be log x over log of x with a constant, when the constant's bigger than 1, you beat this factor, and then you're past the jumping champion. If you're less than 1, you haven't beat it, and you're still going to get the jumping champion. And so here's actually how the proof, I mean, there's some lemmas. You go through those asymptotic formulas and make sure the error terms don't hurt you, but basically, here's how it works. Here's log x over log of x. So you take any number you want less than 1 times log x over log of x. Take another number that's, here's the number less than 1, I mean bigger than 1, times log x over log of x squared. See, because if one primorial is here, the previous one is right here at log x over log of x squared. So if there's a primorial in this interval, it will beat all the previous primordials, and it will be the champion, because on the other hand, it will also, you see, it will also beat the next primordial out of this interval is over here, and it's going to now lose. So basically, in this interval, you beat all the earlier stuff, you beat all the later stuff, and you're the champion. But if there is no primordial in this interval, then we make an interval here that's a little bit longer than log log of x. I make the a here be a little smaller than the b. So this interval is long enough, there has to be a primordial in it. Similarly, this interval is now long enough, there has to be a primordial here. And therefore, if there's none in here, there's a primordial here, and there's a primordial in here. And this primordial will beat all the earlier guys. This primordial here will beat all the later guys. So one of these two is the champion. And the only question is, either this one beats this guy and is the champion, or this one beats this one's the champion. And both of those things can happen as you vary x. And because the counting function is just increasing by one, there has to be times when they're equal as one champion passes another. So basically, that's it. And the final thing here is that this key idea, which was basically proving that once you get a little bit up near the average spacing, you really get a little bit smaller than where you were earlier, is basically just an inclusion-exclusion where you don't throw everything out. So basically, for upper bounds, we want to get an upper bound that's non-trivial, where d will be something like log of x or log of x squared, something in that range. So what we do is you look at the number of pairs. So the upper bound is the number of pairs. And I'm not going to throw away triples, but I'm not going to throw away all the triples. I'm just going to throw away triples where the prime that's between my two primes is actually pretty small in this range from 1 to capital D. And I won't make D be too large here, you see. That way, I'm definitely throwing out stuff, you see. So I'm definitely getting down from here, but the trouble is I may be throwing out too much because I might throw out the same interval more than once. So I'm going to add back on all the possible overcounting that I've thrown out here. And if I keep this D pretty small, this term won't overwhelm this. If you actually try to make D be all the way up to size, this capital B, D be all the way up to size D, this term will actually overwhelm this, and you'll get a trivial bound, you see. So basically, we try to make sure that the overcounting from quadruples is kept pretty small by keeping D pretty small, but then there's still enough stuff here to bring you down from the upper bound, which is basically being attained by the champion. And that's how you eliminate any of the gaps that are a little bit larger than the champion will be handled here. And I think that's it.